You know what? My computer, it's an incredible story, has had an incredible new lease of life. It hasn't crashed for like almost a year now. And I thought it was completely death's
door. Sorry, Henry,
door.
I can't hear you. You've gone.
Don't mess with me. I know you can hear me crystal clear. It's incredible. Honestly, this it's one of those amazing stories. It's like when Muhammad Ali had that, at the age of 35, he's won the championship back in the jungle. He's won back the top belt, the biggest belt. He's got a new brand new belt at 35.
I had to buy a brand new belt at 35.
And then,
but that was kind of the opposite of Muhammad Ali.
Well, those are the two belts that you have to get, don't you, in life, around about
the one when you stacked on some weight.
And the one when you've entered the pantheon of sporting gods. Isn't it? And they're very much opposite ends of the emotional spectrum, aren't they?
And can't really be worn at the same occasions either. If you pack the wrong belt for a wedding or something, it just looks a bit showy.
Oh, I've got my world heavyweight boxing champion of the world belt. This.
Yeah, no, I did forget it. No, I'm not being like that.
They're not very practical belts, those belts. You go through all that to win a belt, and then what's that going to pair with, realistically?
Also, good luck taking that down to your local leathermongers and asking him to stick an extra hole in it if your body shape does change over the years. Because, you know...
Are you going to get charged through the nose for that?
You get charged through the nose for battering a pin-sized hole through something made out of sheer tin, probably, isn't it? Very, very hard to work with.
It is funny, isn't it, how in boxing and wrestling, the thing that you're competing for is a belt.
It is odd, isn't it?
I mean, it doesn't make more sense than a cup. I mean, a cup doesn't make much sense either.
The cup at least can be put on a shelf. The belt, I suppose you probably just need to hire an entourage of people just to stand on display, sort of mannequins, don't you, in your living room, in lieu of a trophy cabinet.
It suits the person that makes a mannequin of themselves every couple of years to create a kind of visual reference point for their progress in life and has them living around him.
Yeah.
But that's how many of us have the time to do that? Obviously, we'd all like to. one thing I would say about the cup, though, is that the cup for me, because you say, yeah, the cup, what's the point of winning a cup? I do remember as a kid, when it was first explained to me that they don't actually get to keep the World Cup or the cup. I mean, it took me years to get.
I still haven't got over that.
It just made no sense. What are you talking about? But they've done it for the cup. If you've been watching this, we've been following this tournament for months. They've done it for the cup. There's constant photos of previous people holding the cup. Oh, hang on a minute. That should have. I seem to have made a new cup each year.
What? And they then work out a rota of who gets the cup for January, who gets it for
exactly.
February.
Exactly. They must split it over the year. It's like a timeshare, isn't it, Dad? It's like a timeshare. Yeah? Obviously, the summer months are the ones where you really want the cup. You want to show it off down the beach, don't you? Put it down the front of your speedos. Whatever. Have fun with it. Obviously, the summer months are the most popular, so those probably get swapped every couple of years. Or
I'd want it for Christmas, I think.
Yeah, some people might want it for Christmas.
Yeah, no one wants it in November.
Exactly. Maybe the engraver gets to take it away for the weekend.
Maybe they draw lots. I don't know. Maybe you get it for a longer spell in November. Maybe someone's got a birthday in November. I mean, maybe there's someone who's keen.
Exactly. You
know? Or maybe someone wants to drink hot cider out of it while they watch a fireworks display.
Trophy scrumpy night.
What I'm saying is this cup is great all year round, Mike. Sorry, I just want to make that very clear.
Okay.
Don't try and make out there's a month where drinking out of the World Cup isn't going to be fun.
You're right. I take it back. You're quite right.
But of course, the World Cup actually isn't a cup, is it? It's three golden ghosts holding an atlas ball, or the Earth, isn't it? Is it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So you can't actually do anything with that. It's purely symbolic. But
well, no, you can. You can thrust that through the internal cavity of a lamb and then
yeah, it's great.
Rotate it slowly over fire.
It's a really good tool for whacking a nail through a thick leather belt as well.
If you need to. So actually, you can actually match up with the boxers if they need to resize their...
In fact, it's the only tool that will work for that.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, no, it's good. As you're right, Ben. So it's agriculturally, you can use it for
it's a spit roast.
A spit roast or any sort of bovine cesarean. If you need a bovine cesarean.
if you've opted for the blunt cesarean.
You're going for a fully blunt cesarean where the mother of the calf is of roasting age. So I think I can say that because I was born by cesarean section myself. So I've been there. I've been at the sharp end of it.
And you're approaching roasting age yourself, aren't you?
approaching Mystic Age myself. So I've got both ends of this covered.
But I think, Henry, when I found out that same thing, I was also, didn't make sense to me. But I think if you win the World Cup a certain number of times, you do get to keep it. Or is that bollocks?
Well, that might be true.
Ooh.
But I still think the core... I don't think that's true anyway, but...
Touché.
But... No, right, I got you there, didn't I?
It sounds like a great piece of not true trivia, though, doesn't it?
Well, the irony there, though, isn't it, is that as a child, so there are a couple of things that I remember blowing my mind as a child. I may have mentioned these before on the podcast.
Concept of death?
No, I'm still fine with that. Weirdly, I'm waiting for that. I'm waiting for that to hit in. I think I still got actually that childhood sort of assumption that they'll have covered death by the time I get there. They'll have sorted it. They've got top boffins on this.
Yeah, I'm very much on your team as well.
They've designed a sandwich with three bits of bread in it. They can pull off incredible stuff. Do you know what I mean? I mean, they've designed the three slice sandwich in a box. Can you imagine the admin that has to go into that?
They've got a tour bus that can go on the water as well as land.
Exactly. They've got fully amphibious tourism options.
Catamarans.
Yeah.
I think they've got hotels which are underwater, I think.
They've made a perfect waxed Frank Sinatra.
They've made a perfect waxed Sinatra that's so accurate that even Frank Sinatra's own ghost doesn't know the difference. Because he does hold on to it. Carry on.
Could it not be argued, Henry, that scientists have been spending much too much time on all this stuff rather than... living forever thing.
It turns out the boffins are the ultimate procrastinators.
I don't need three choices of sandwich in a box. I can just choose. I don't need a ham salad, a prawn brulee, and a basic cheese. I just pick a side. In fact, maybe that suggests that the scientists are, you're right, are procrastinators themselves. They're not focusing on the right stuff. But
it feels like they've probably hit a wall.
They've hit some sort of wall, haven't they?
When it comes to the everlasting life thing.
No, so anyway, so the things which blew my mind as a kid that didn't make any sense to me was when my dad explained to me that the left and right system is the opposite if you're facing the other way around. that I was actually angry when I found that out. I was like, no, left.
Well, that was a big bump in the road for the scientists trying to do eternal life, to be honest. They spent a long time trying to work that out.
They did.
So you had just, as far as you were concerned, worked out where magnetic left was. Yeah.
I was completely sure where my left was, and I was looking forward to a future exploring the high seas, and mapping the undiscovered dark left, the sections of the left that hadn't yet been explored. So I was completely. In fact, I remember I was standing in a town square, and I worked out. I said, left is over there, right is over there, and had it all sorted. And then my dad went,
town square. Where did you grow up? In some sort of mid-European town.
It was. I remember the matins bell was tolling, and
the crier was talking of this morning's hangings.
That's right. And the harvest was being celebrated by everyone tipping as much cheese as they could down the well. Everyone was getting all their cheese down.
the fresh cut cheese
was being sacrificed down the well to bring in a good harvest. So anyway, no, I think it was on a holiday. That's why we're in a town square. So, and then I turned round to explain to him how happy I was, how I'd sorted it. And then he explained, no, you've nearly got it. It's just that when you're facing this way, it's the exact opposite. And when you're facing that way, so that's, well, you've got left, right, forwards. When you face forwards, it's off by 25 degrees. Then, and in fact, it's infinitely, in fact, there's actually infinite amounts of left and rights.
Infinite lefts.
So by the time you've got infinite lefts, you might as well not have any left. Yeah? Yeah, Dad?
Which is why you're now a zero leftist, isn't it?
I'm now a zero. I don't believe in left.
You know, you refuse.
Completely refuse. It's a conspiracy. I'm not on board with it. But you want to keep on doing your left and right? Be my guest. Yeah.
Oh, thank goodness for up and down, eh?
Exactly. Well, those ones you can rely on. That's all we've got, frankly. Yeah, so yeah, left and right. That blew my mind. The other one which blew my mind was, again, I may have mentioned this already, was when I was explained to me that the people, the cashiers in the supermarkets didn't get to take all that money home with them at the end of the day.
Oh, I don't think I've ever...
So you still think they do? You still assume that's still been your assumption? Have you not had that challenge yet? How else does it work?
How else does it work? You can't leave that overnight, right?
And then some of the money goes into the head of that fiberglass Labrador, and then that walks home at the end of the day.
That's right.
Jingling all the way.
But the thing about not keeping the cup, right, because in a way, I think this is an example of the wisdom of children. Because, feel free to create a wisdom of children jingle, by the way.
Father, why is there war?
The innocent wisdom of children.
Father, instead of the fighting, why aren't the people doing more of the hugging?
wise child. So they're all, they've won the cup. Look how happy they are. They're holding the cup. They're crying. They've worked hard for that cup. And you're telling me they don't get the cup. So the cup's purely symbolic. So what you're being told there as a child is, no. It doesn't mean anything. It's meaningless. It's absurd. So the child there, we're onto something as a child there. They should win the cup. I mean, if you're not winning the cup, what is it? And it turns out it's nothing. It's just, now you watch, when a team wins the cup or whatever, wins the league in any sport, or in football, I'm thinking about any sport, what happens is you get a shot of them, they win, and what it means is they do this funny dance on the pitch where they kind of jump up and down, and then small rectangles of coloured paper are released around them, and then they do this thing where because they kind of don't know what to do, because they don't know what's really happened, because they don't actually get any, but if they actually got to keep the cup, they'd have a cup.
They would just quietly walk back to the changing room with their cup.
They'd quietly walk back to the chair.
Quietly content with what was happening.
Yeah, and what else do you do with a cup? They'd maybe make a cup of tea, put it in the cup, or they'd get a special shelf for it, start drawing up the rota for the year. I think it would make... Do you know what I mean?
I do think that when I watched the World Cup final, when they were all dancing and stuff afterwards, I sort of felt like, even if I was in the team that had won the World Cup, I don't think I would celebrate in that way. Like, that's not how I celebrate anything. I mean, I've never celebrated anything by dancing around. I think you're right. Like, it's a learned behaviour that you sort of have to do, because...
You have to do this funny jiggly dance. And it's like, is that what it's all about? Because I can do that dance right now. Do you know what I mean? It'll save me...
I don't need to win a World Cup.
I don't need to win a World Cup to do that dance.
I think the person I understand who's jiggling up and down awkwardly is the sub in the squad who never made it off the bench in the whole tournament.
Who hasn't played a single minute.
That guy, that always pains me. There's too many people in that jiggly dance.
Yeah.
There's too many people there.
That's true.
And, you know, some of them are sort of, you know, behind the scenes, you know, the medics and the physios, but some of them are players who just didn't. And so I always find that, I find it quite painful, that image, because I know there's a couple of people jiggling in and someone's going, come on, Gary, come on, in you go, come on, no, I really didn't,
come on.
Kick the ball, come on, yeah. He's got to jiggle up and down. And he's heartbroken. He's utterly heartbroken.
Well, that's why you're not, the novel you're writing is, it's called The Spare Jiggler, isn't it?
It was zero research, football-based novel. I'm scorer again. Are you mad?
Yeah.
Yeah?
How many segments do you expect me to get out of one orange? I didn't get into this business for segmenting. There's quite good stuff in there. Although one thing I will say about a cup, because you say a cup is a pointless object.
No, nobody said that. Let's just be clear. None of us think that a cup is a pointless object.
Hey, I'm talking to the fourth bean, the meta bean, the bean in my head,
the dark side, Benjamin, Henry, and Mock.
There's someone out there that's thinking that the cup is a pointless object. But I would say, because it's a metal cup with two handles. When do you ever need that? Well, I'll tell you when.
When you're playing tug of cup.
When you're playing a good muscle building game of tug of cup. I think all cups should have that. All mugs and cups should have two handles. Because you think about it, that's a mug you can actually hand, or a cup you can hand to someone that's got hot beverage in it. Whereas a mug of hot. Liquids. I think I hit some sort of wall halfway through this idea.
we can coach you through this. It's okay.
Get me through it. I've hit my darkest hour. This is my nadir. I need my beans around me. Will you be there for me? You know, when it's really hard to hand someone a hot cup of tea or a hot mug because it's only got one handle on it. So someone has to be in a lot of pain.
It's a notorious issue. And do you handle it? Do you get hot fingers, or do they got hot fingers? You know,
someone's going to get hot fingers here.
But do you know the reason why there aren't two, Henry?
If you're going to talk to me about dishwasher logistics, then we can end this conversation right now. because I'm sick to the teeth. I've had the boys from Smeg. I've talked to the boys from Smeg. I've talked to the lads from Bosch. Yeah.
I've talked to the women from Miele.
You've been asking for a bespoke, slightly wider dishwasher for years, haven't you? And they won't do it.
They won't do it because apparently something else in the kitchen has to suffer, which is generally...
The cupboard with the 1,000 bags for life in it.
But you can push that one, you can squeeze that one tighter, Ben. I believe we can still squeeze that cupboard tighter, those bags. They got more given them. No, sorry, what were you saying?
My point was that once you've put two handles on...
Where does it stop?
Well, yeah, why doesn't someone go, well, if you put three handles on, then someone could pass it to someone else and then someone else.
So two people could get in on that mug. Then you've got, yeah, got four handles and you've got then five handles. Then you've got an entire ring of handles.
It's just dense handles. Yeah. No one's getting their fingers in at all.
I think, Henry, the cup thing with children not understanding why you don't get the cup, does it point at kind of like an inherent materialism of children that you slightly grow out of as you get older?
Well, maybe yes, but on contrary to that, it also shows that children haven't yet developed a strong sense of sponsorship deals from Adidas and the like.
That's right. That's a good point. And wage structures, TV rights. The fact is that by winning that cup, you've raised the profile of yourself as a player. Your image rights are now something that you can look at exploiting financially. You're opening up fiscal opportunities and fiscal range, isn't it? So we're talking about maximizing earning capacity across a range of platforms.
And if you find yourself in that situation, do get on to Omnibank.
Because Omnibank, we like to think of ourselves as the financial equivalent of a
proper bank.
Of a real bank.
Of a tiger.
We're like a mechanized tiger, but we're your tiger. Imagine a tiger with your face and Satan's heart. Mm-hmm. That's the Omnibank way. No, but yeah, you're right, Mike. It's about revenue potentials, maximization. Also legacy stuff, that kind of thing, isn't it? That's what it's about.
Kids aren't very tuned into legacy.
It's very rare you hear kind of a four-year-old say, I must secure my legacy this day. You will remember me when I have passed on to Valhalla. My name will echo in the halls and the feasting rooms of this palace forever.
I know I'm a great child, but what does it mean if I'm not remembered for centuries to come? I will make my mark on this continent. Mark my words. And yes, I will have some of the apple yogurt, please. Apple. The apple yogurt, yes. If you could smush the apple in the yogurt, thank you. Yes, I know I'm great. Yes, I know I'm great. Don't tickle me there. I like it when you tickle me there. I know I'm great. We've just invented Boss Baby, have we? I've not seen Boss Baby, but I think we may have invented it.
12 years too late. Damn it.
Well, that's heartbreaking because also in the wide swathe of human history, that's just like a blink. You know, we were so close to getting Boss Baby.
I know.
And that would have ironically secured our legacy.
That would have secured all of our legacies. I mean, my legacy right now is shaky as heck. Imagine a Christmas pudding that's trying to stand upright on a chopstick. That's how I feel about my legacy right now. It's like it's gonna be a full time job just to keep it. Do you know what I mean?
And is it on fire with hot brandy?
The chopstick's on fire as well. It's all on fire, but not with hot brandy because that's good fire. That's entertainment fire. That's family fire, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's proper fire. It's petrol fire. Because if you cover something in brandy and set fire to it, it's a harmless and pleasurable blue flame that gets created, isn't it? Which all it does is enhance family values and a sense of togetherness. And
can't burn anything
from
itself.
Should we put a spoiler that that's not true? Not a spoiler, a warning.
Yes,
that isn't true. Probably.
All flames are dangerous in their own way.
Yeah.
Apart from the flame, the friendship.
Yeah, that's true. Although, I tell you what, an old flame of mine got back in touch, and I think that one might be dangerous because it's that sexy monk.
Oh, that sexy, sexy monk.
He's still dating that monk, the sexy monk. Yeah, the sexy monk. Yeah, well, we're not exactly dating. It's kind of on and off, isn't it? Because he has to spend, well, 95% of any 24-hour period chanting. And
and he's just been off on a 90-day pilgrimage barefoot, walking to the south of France.
I mean, he's dating because he's writing his own history of Constantinople. So he's writing
that's right.
A lot of heavily illuminated days.
Constantly dating. But I tell you what. oh, hang on.
Think of your legacy, Henry.
The Christmas pudding is wobbling hard. There's hardly any chopstick left. It's almost all burnt away. I tell you what. It's not just his pews he keeps in order. He also has to shave a lot downstairs because he's obviously infected by a lot of lice. Because it's very poor hygiene standards up in a medieval monastery.
Also, they've got to make the hair shirts out of something, haven't they? So,
oh, that sexy monk. Right. Okay, nicely done. What were we talking about?
Okay, it's time to turn on the Beam Machine. And this week, instead of playing our normal Beam Machine jingle, we are using one sent in by Hannah from Norwich.
Thank you, Hannah.
Thanks, Hannah.
She says, "Hi, Beans. I've had a go at the Beam Machine theme, but in an instrumental orchestral style. Picture the Beam Machine going off on an epic quest, flying through the sky, or appearing on an episode of Gardener's World. And that's about where I think this lands. Hope you enjoy. Yours humbly, Hannah." So let's have a listen.
Lovely.
Oh, beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you, Hannah.
I pictured a sort of sun-kissed field.
It's very peaceful, wasn't it?
I liked it because I think it distracted from, rather than captured, the visceral, violent experience that the Beam Machine is.
Yes.
Yeah, but you're the only person who has to really think about that. The rest of us don't want to think about that. We want to think about what it's for, what it symbolises.
That almost felt like a dream, Ben, where you were dreaming that the Beam Machine had somehow been, they'd managed to separate it from your body, and you're sort of frolicking and gambling free in a field.
A blissful, pain-free moment just before death.
Yeah.
After that unsurvivable separation, which we all know is coming one day, don't know when.
And you know that you've only got a limited amount of time, and you're just, you're gambling, and...
Yeah. I'm on the phone to William Hill.
phone to William Hill, okay.
He's doing the old gamble. trying to finish a Wordle. You know, there's no time.
But thank you, Hannah. That was lovely. Okay, so this week's topic is sent in by the Chattatar podcast.
What?
Who are they? Are they?
Wait a minute. They've got in touch.
The number one podcast in the Avatar 2 Way of Water podcast universe.
Well, I believe Chattatar covers Avatar 1 and 2, as well as potential future Avatar episodes and the Avatar universe in the round, Mike.
And so, merch.
That's right.
Well, I just want to say we're all big fans of that pod.
It's very, very good.
And so thank you for contacting us. We'd be more than happy to talk about your topic, which is...
What do they want?
Avatar 2, The Way of Water.
Golly, a podcast crossover ep for the last episode of this series. Extraordinary.
Wow, it's a bold move.
It's the last episode of the series, so it's nice to do something a bit different, a bit fun, a bit special. I did put a call into Owlfuckers to see whether they wanted to do a crossover episode.
Yes.
Obviously, that's slightly awkward for Henry because he'd be crossing over with himself.
Yeah. It's tricky diary-wise.
And obviously, this podcast has been going on for a while, hasn't it? So it is time for us to sort of try ill-conceived experiments, isn't it? In a desperate bid to try and clutch onto it for a bit longer.
What's it called when you've already jumped the shark, but you're going to jump another shark?
Yeah, it's the shark jump Megadon three-pointer, I think is what it's called.
Now, Mike, you had a bit more spare time than usual this week. The tour's bedded in. You know what you're doing. The show's there.
You know, not according to everybody, but yeah, it's true. The show is.
But the pre-show anxieties are melting away as you become more comfortable performing the show, not on a nightly basis.
But basically, performing a show, you've gone through the emotional journey performing a show, which is the anxiety of creating it, then the pizzazz, the showbiz, the wow, the excitement, the glamour, the sparkle, the tinsel, nights in Soho with the Patricks, we've already discussed. You've been through all that, the excitement, but and then it just at this point it becomes a job, isn't it? And it becomes as dull and flavourless a grind for you as working back in the wafer factory, isn't it?
That's what inspired the show.
Exactly. Was he years in the wafer factory? But isn't it? Because it's that's what people didn't understand about showbiz. They didn't understand about podcasting. I mean, none of us are enjoying this, are we, right now? It's like, for me, I feel like I'm back in a cracker factory, isn't it? It's just dry.
You pre-record your bits, don't you? You pre-record your bits, and Ben and I have to try and work it out over the top.
These are all pre-recorded. I didn't even know.
Nightmarishly difficult job for me and Ben to try and
it's horrible.
Squeeze it in.
But you do a very good job of editing it, especially moments like this where it feels like we actually are, you know, replicating the awkwardness of just a chat. But obviously, I'm by myself. I'm actually I'm on holiday. I'm in Patagonia. I'm exploring Patagonia at the moment, which is so I'm currently in a Zorb. I've wired up a Zorb, so I'm actually I'm floating through the Patagonian mountains. I'm looking at, for example, right now to my left, I'm looking at an absolutely breathtaking crystal river that's snaking its way through an absolutely fabulously grand and imposing valley, flanked by huge, whopping great mountains.
Probably
there's an eagle. I can see an eagle. It's an eagle. I can see an eagle doing something. That's the only way for me to actually stay awake during the. I'm so bored by this process, but I have to be experiencing extreme beauty. And actually, the Zorb. Right now, I've gone off the edge of a cliff now, so I'm freezorbing. Whoa! So that's where the energy's coming from. And obviously, you guys will work something around it. Probably don't keep this bit in because you don't give away all the secrets.
Mike's actually touring by Zorb, aren't you?
I'm absorbing about, which is why. So at the moment, it's tricky. I'm up. I'm sort of edging towards Cumbria now. I'm in Lancaster today. It's been very hard getting up here. And then Kendall, there's going to be some uphills, but then I'm going to roll back down towards the Midlands and the South. That's the plan, because I think the South and the Midlands are downhill from Cumbria.
Yeah, and have you managed to minimise the amount of puking that happens within the Zorb?
No. That's a big problem, especially when you're wearing a woolen suit on the stage.
Yeah.
I've not done a tour like this before. So, you iron these things out as you go through, don't you? It's a lifelong learning, really.
Because you said you feel like you know what it's like now to be a sock in a washing machine full of puke. Don't you?
That after party sock. Yeah. Which is a feeling I've long wanted to experience.
Because it's hard to organise things in. Obviously, there are various different orders in which things can be organised in life. There's alphabetical order. There's chronological order. There's reverse chronological order. But altitudinal order. It's quite hard to organise a tour, isn't it? In altitudinal order.
Yeah, we haven't managed it by any means. So there is going to be quite a lot of Zorbal hoofing going on for me. People are going to see me hoofing it up the M6 on a Zorb down the hard shoulder. And fine. By all means, hoot your horns as you've been doing, but please don't jeer, because I'm struggling. I'm having a tough old time.
And is it correct that you introduce a Shetland pony into the inside of the Zorb, which starts running and then gets it moving to go up the hill?
Yes, but the Shetland pony, Excelsior started getting quite distressed. Didn't like it, so we had to divert to a pony farm just north of Leeds. And where it's just gone into retirement, which is another expense. These things are, it's a whole. The whole thing is a massive loss-making enterprise.
Excelsior's writing his memoirs now, isn't he? And he says, I think he does say in them, doesn't he, that he now knows what it feels like to be a Shetland pony in a washing machine full of puke and a sock.
Yeah, we didn't leave on good terms.
Also, is it a bit humiliating that people have seen you in the show and they think, oh, it's excited, is it the pizzazz? And then they're on their way home. They're like, is that the guy we saw in the show? If you look in the wing mirror, there's a guy huffing and puffing. It looks like he's in a Zorb with a poke.
On a hard shoulder. he's got a puncture. Should we put over and help him? No, we've got, it's not safe. We just
leave it. Someone else will pull up. He'll be fine. It looks like he's crying. Doesn't matter. Just keep going.
And the AA won't come out for a Zorb, will they, as you've discovered?
It's not. I never registered Zorb for my AA card. which I'm rueing.
By the way, Mike, I just want to make sure, because then you've got some long trips involved. If you're feeling tired, you do zorb over into the hard shoulder and have a nap, don't you? Please tell me you do.
The hard shoulder is where the work is being done. Do you know what I mean?
Well, he's already in the hard shoulder.
You're already in the hard shoulder.
He zorbs into the road and has a nap.
Yeah.
I heard that you zorb into the road and have a nap and then hope that the cars just boot you along the motorway.
I'm hoping for a little nudge from an estate. Yeah, or a Kia Sportage, if I can get it, you know.
Pummel you to the next destination.
But they won't actually let me into the service stations because there's no way you can park a Zorb, technically, in a service station. So it's tiring.
But presumably it'd be useful for you to use the tire air pressure things. Do you ever use those to just give yourself a boost?
Just myself.
Just for yourself?
Yeah, if I'm short of puff. Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Just pep you up a bit.
Anyway, what I was getting at, Mike, is that obviously you're spending a lot of time dragging that Zorb around, but you managed to carve out a bit of me time this week, didn't you? You had a little window of me time, and normally you'd be spending that time, what, a couple of Kit Kats
and just, ponder over some of the mistakes I've made over the years. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And sometimes you sometimes think of me time as meat time, doesn't you? Why can't me time be meat time? So sometimes you'll get a couple of supermarket sausages, take the inner meat out of the skin and reform it into shapes of people you've known.
Shapes of people I've wronged. Yeah. And apologise.
these are the things that happen on tour, isn't it? It's people don't know about. That you go through steps like this.
It's just standard issue.
That's what happens as part of the touring life.
Yeah. Yeah, so my fingers absolutely stink of cured meats and chorizo.
Yeah,
but you know that's all par for the course. Anyone who's been on tour will understand what I'm talking about.
Yeah, it pushes you to strange places, doesn't it? For example, are you on tour right now? By the way,
yeah, I'm in Lancaster as we speak.
You're in Lancaster. Can I say I've just noticed that? Are you in a hotel?
Yeah,
is that some hotel art on the wall behind you?
It is. Yeah. Well, it's actually not a hotel technique. I got a little sort of flat.
Okay.
In Lancaster because. I managed to find a flat that was actually cheaper than the local hotels and with pretty decent parking.
Another thing which happens on tour is that thought you've had, you're going to keep that thought going for about 6 or 7 hours.
I've told everyone I know about that.
You've told everyone.
That's been my conversational gambit. Oh, you'll have some adventures on tour. I bet you'll have some stories. Well, yes, actually. Let me tell you, in Lancaster, when I booked a bike, I actually found a protection
cheaper than the
flat. Quite good, secure parking and underground.
And later on
no
this
breakfast,
afternoon,
obviously, no breakfast.
There's no breakfast. I didn't think of that at the time. There's no breakfast. Nothing like that at all, but there is good parking.
Actually, cheaper than. And later on this afternoon, you'll be sat in a, I imagine, in the town centre in a major coffee franchise, and that thought will just come back to you again. You'll go, yeah.
It'll be a source of great comfort.
It actually was slightly cheaper than the hotel. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, what I was getting at, Mike, is that obviously you had a bit of me time.
Yes.
And you spent it the right way.
I spent it the way that the beans wanted me to spend that time. Yes.
Not just the beans, but the way that our sort of patron, James Cameron, wanted you to spend it.
Yeah. Well, very much not, because not only did I go and see Way of Water, I saw it in 3D, which I don't think either of you managed to do, did you?
No, because Mike sent us a WhatsApp image of him holding his 3D glasses ready to view. And I immediately got this, like, I don't know if you felt the same way, Henry.
I couldn't believe it.
Deep pang of like regret that I didn't go full 3D.
Such a hard pang.
Not just 3D, but I believe IMAX.
The IMAX, yes. The biggest. There's an MC at the IMAX. I haven't been there for years. A guy came on and before the screening after the... James Cameron came on disguised as an Irishman in his 30s.
Did a bit of banter with the crowd, or...?
Did a bit of banter with the crowd and told us that it was the biggest screen in Europe, I think he said.
Why do we need it to be the biggest screen in Europe? Do you know what I mean?
I actually could have done with it being not the biggest screen in Europe, as it turned out, particularly because it was almost entirely sold out, and when I got the ticket, mine was in the front row. Bloody hell. I mean,
God,
within...
that's too big.
I would say 90 big. Seconds, I had an absolutely splitting headache, and the sound is... the volume is up to kind of 75, and it's overwhelming, in that place.
The human being is not designed to empathise with a face that is, like, you know, 70 feet tall. Do you know what I mean?
The face of a god, of a very god.
Our bodies are probably... sort of our response would be to run or hide or whatever, rather than empathize and get involved in their story. You come across a face that big, so you're not designed for it.
Yeah.
But why did it have to be? Because for me, what storytelling is about, right, is okay. It's actually just stumbling across a delightful little old higgledy-piggledy secondhand bookshop called McCrinken and Son. Oh, look at that lovely old creaky sign. It's got a picture of a book on it. McCrinkle and Sons. I think I'll have a little pop in. Ding, ding, ding.
Welcome to McCrinkles and Sons. Enjoy the different worlds that we can transport you through to and around using old-fashioned book technology.
Not just with books, but with a range of flapjacks.
Which we've designed to open like books. They're called bookjacks. We call them flapbooks. Look here, why don't you try and read this fourth edition of Tristram Shandy, which has got almost 57% of the pages remaining. Only 42p. And while you're enjoying that, why don't you have a nice little flat bookjack. Flatbooks. We're not quite sure what to call them yet. But you creak them open and you look at them and you think they're dry and raisiny, but bite through and they're actually even drier on the inside than they are on the outside. It's like the opposite of an eclair.
And I'm afraid I picked out the raisins last week.
There aren't any raisins left. Yeah. There's no raisins left in there. you creep around the little higgledy piggledy corridors of McCrinkles and Sons, and you can smell that smell of dust and the hot buttery smell of another set of flatbook jacks being cooked up downstairs. And you pull a book off the shelf and you smell it. What I love is that's the smell of an old book.
Oh, but then you realise it's a French grammar O-level guide from 1982. And you think, yes, I'm going to have this.
I will read it.
I just love the smell of old books. And
that's adorable. That's adorable. Oh, I feel really endeared to you now.
I know what you mean. But I tell you what I really like. It's actually just smelling books and not even reading them.
Do you know what I call my Kindle? Optimus Prime, because it's an evil robot.
Yeah.
Because actually I like to smell old books, actually.
You know, the next Kindle edition, this is true, the next Kindle edition, they've teamed up with a vape company and you press a button and it releases the smell of old books while you're reading it. And you can choose different types of old book. Really old books, not so old.
Flood damaged.
Flood damaged, bilious, dog-eared, not dog-eared, cat-eared, parrot strat on it.
And of course, banana.
And banana.
Yeah.
So that's going to be part of the reading experience. So
what is the point you're making?
Well, the point that I'm making is when you go into McCrinkles and Sons, he doesn't say, and by the way, if you come out in the back, I've got the biggest copy of Ulysses in Europe. It's 70 feet tall. Each word is bigger than a car. It's incredible. Like, it's not about that. Certainly, look. This is probably just me. I'm sorry, it's just me. This probably isn't you guys and other people, but maybe it's just silly old me. I've got this thing about, I just like old bookshops and the smell of books and old-fashioned things, and like a leather satchel that's all curled up, that kind of thing. But maybe it's just me. You guys carry on. I know you like your monster trucks and your massive screens and all that. That's probably just silly old me.
I was slightly troubled because the guy sitting next to me had brought a child with him who could have been no more than 5 years of age. That I found quite stressful. Small that they sit on a chair at a perfect right angle, because their legs, there's no leg dangling, right? Their shoes are just poking over the edge of the seat.
They don't need the leg dangle. Yeah, that whole functionality element of a chair is for them for them. It's a flat. It's just a sort of
It's kind of bed, basically.
It's a bed, yeah.
They've just been wedged in. They're just perfectly wedged in, basically.
So was the kid facing you then?
What?
No. No, the kid was facing the screen.
Oh, I thought you meant that the kid was 90 degrees from the screen, so facing you.
No, I mean, as in there, that's the way they're sat, just to illustrate the size of this child, you know? The legs aren't dangling.
If you ran a string from the end of their foot to the top of their head, you'd create a perfect equilateral triangle.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's how they fit on the chair, right? Their knees aren't bending over the end of the chair. They're that little. Like, all that's poking over the end of the chair is their shoes.
So actually, they're the shape of a book.
They're the shape of a book.
Which is actually probably what, certainly, it's just silly old me, but actually that's what I prefer doing, probably.
You love the smell of an old child. That's the shape of a book, don't you?
I do love the Yeah, I love the smell of a dusty old child.
Whereas adults in that kind of chair, you just sort of fill the chairs. You sort of fill the container in a way, a bit like the way of water.
Oh, lovely.
Interesting.
Very nicely done.
It always finds a way.
But yeah, I found that quite stressful.
The angle of the child.
Yeah, because they're not going to enjoy it, are they?
That's... I thought, based on what you told me, what I knew about it, I thought, for a start, this is more than 3 hours long, right? I've gathered there are battle scenes. And sure enough, there is a point where someone's arm gets severed, you know?
I know.
In brilliant 3D and in slow motion as well. So James Cameron obviously decided, you're not going to miss this, okay? There's no way anyone is going to miss the fact because he's a bad guy. We want to see his arm's been severed. It's going to be severed. Off it goes. There we go.
And does it spin towards you with the 3D? Is it quite...
yeah. Your face is splashed with 3D blood. Yeah. All that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You're not missing it.
Did you look over to the 5-year-old at that moment?
I did, yeah. She was... I mean, she's obviously quite a battle-tested kid because she took it all in a stride, to be fair. She went for one piddle. And apart from that, was just... She didn't. There was no weeping, no gnashing of teeth, no distress, and I have to assume that this little girl in 14 years' time is going to be
the world's most prolific female serial killer.
Exactly, she's going to be conducting some sort of
the Blue Menace.
She's going to be conducting an atrocity, and yeah, it's going to be in blue.
Another Blue Man Group franchise has been murdered. We're losing Blue Man Groups like they're dropping like blue flies. Blue bottles.
Killer leaves a small piece of popcorn right over the body, and that's it. What does it mean?
I don't know, but I'm going to mull this over in about 4 hours after I finish watching Avatar 17.
So that felt quite stressful. And then, yeah, the initial overload of the biggest screen in the solar system and the volume, I think a bit of my brain had to die for me to then adjust enough to comfortably get through the next 3.5 hours.
Bloody hell.
Could you just feel like a chunk of your memories going away, like a bit falling off an iceberg, you know?
It was just slipped away to be gone forever.
Well, you had to sacrifice memories to encompass experience.
I think so. And then it was quite hard work. And I found myself a little bit, I will admit, in the first half an hour, so I think, bloody Ben.
Oh, really?
We've ruined your life.
I could be doing anything with this 3.5 hours. I'm never going to get this time back.
In fact, I feel like I'm a blue alien trying to live my life, and Ben and Henry are the mechanized colonists who've come in and actually started telling me what to do. And actually, I've talked myself into empathizing with the film. It's quite a good concept.
And then I will admit, there came a point where I did find things quite hard to follow because, and you hadn't mentioned this, you hadn't warned me about this, because it was apparent that the Whalians have all got tattoos.
Oh, I forgot about that.
I don't remember that.
They've got jobs and tattoos.
Tattooed whales.
They've got jobs and hobbies that they pursue to excellence. Yeah. And they've got tattoos.
Yeah, I forgot. They do have tattoos. Yeah, I forgot. But there's never really talked about what that...
No, you never see a whale. You never see the Whalian getting a tattoo. when they arrive in from their big journey, none of them are like flopping on the beach. I don't know who's doing the tattoos. I don't know if it's other Whalians or if it's...
You don't
the,
see a Whalian tattoo parlour, do you?
Or if it's the sea people doing the tattoos. I think you're not supposed to go swimming for a little bit after you've had a tattoo as well. So,
as a whalian, as a water-based animal, that's going to be tricky.
It's complicated. That was immensely distracting.
So what's your overall review of the movie?
Well, my overwhelming feeling as I emerged from it was one of regret. one of time lost, never to be retrieved.
One of looking for a paracetamol?
Were you thinking... I could have been sat in a cafe thinking about how my hotel is actually an apartment, actually cheaper. I could have been thinking about that for 3 hours, actually cheaper, which is extraordinary when you think about it.
Yeah, and I was trying to think about that while I was in the cinema, but the noise is so intense.
Yeah, I know.
Keep getting battered by sort of 3D anemones that you can't.
Yeah.
It's a movie that insists that you watch it. If you watch it in 3D, you can't go off on a little daydream. It's not like watching Remains of the Day or something where
it's quite shouty.
Suddenly you can secretly have a little think about what you might do in May half term. No, it's just watch me, watch me, watch me, watch me. Hello, hello, now look. And it's got sort of shaking little sort of luminescent creatures wiggling about in your face, constantly keeping you awake.
That's exactly right.
It's also... I felt like I'd seen about 18 films in one film. There's at least 12 coming-of-age stories that would have been enough for one film in it.
Yeah, that's very true.
There's quite a few fish out of waters, a few odd couples going on. there's also a sort of dancing with wolves, but the next stage, he's learned to dance with wolves, and now it's dances with wolves, dances with buffalo or something.
Slow dance with wolves. It does feel a bit like they've taken all the kind of screenwriting books or of myth about storytelling and sort of mythic stories and just put it in a blender or whatever, isn't it? It's like there's just so many mythological stories. There's probably like Jonah and the whale going on in there. There's that. There's like Humpty Dumpty. Yuri, they're all in there. Too much. And you're right, Mike. That's why I think I thought of it as like the best, maybe the best two-star film I've ever seen. Because, I didn't go to the loo or anything, which is quite unusual for me for a quarter hour film. I think it's because it, as you say, you don't quite get bored.
Yeah.
But in the same way that if you were to get slapped, but if I was to slap you, Mike, for 3 hours, just slightly harder and harder each time, slap, slap, in the face, one in the nose, one in the chest, or tweak the nipple, or one in the bum, or and I'm screaming at you, and I've broken a chopstick in half, and I'm just jabbing you in the ribs, and I'm going ooh, and I've got a frog, I'm putting a frog in your face. You want to talk to the frog? No. Now I've got an old fashioned one of those bendy rulers from school. I slapped you on the top of the head. Oh, I've got toothpaste now. Putting toothpaste down your trousers. Right, I've got a ferret bring a ferret around your throat. Oh, I've got Alan Yentob in here. He's playing the cymbals. There. Alan Yentob. Another slap. Yeah. It's like that. So it's like, if I was to do that kind of thing for 3 hours to you...
With an end scene introduction at the beginning.
With an end scene introduction at the beginning. So you know where the fire exits are. At the end of that experience, when you were describing it to the police, you wouldn't say you were bored. So that'd be one of the things that hadn't happened. No.
And they might not believe me. They certainly wouldn't believe me that there was a 5-year-old child witnessing all of this as well. You know, they'd just assume that was an aberrant memory. And yeah.
Well, I feel a bit guilty now that we sort of ruined Mike's afternoon.
Yeah.
I feel like me and Henry need to ruin one of our afternoons in penance.
Yeah, sorry, Mike.
No, the thing that was good about it, I'd say the good thing about it is that, because I went through a bit of an emotional journey in that theatre, but when I came out, I felt that rare feeling that I had fulfilled my duty.
Ah, yes.
In a way that was complete.
Yeah. It was a form of military service, almost. Yeah,
and you bellowed into the sky, didn't you? The circle is closed!
Yeah, and some people misunderstood, and some people then turned away from the cinema. They weren't allowed to get in, and they trying to get refunds. And it was a big old complicated, a bit of a hoo-ha.
Also, a lot of people assumed you were just referring to the Zorb you were getting into at the time, as you were zipping the Zorb closed above your head.
I don't know if I've ever been to the IMAX, because I assume it'll be too overwhelming and I won't enjoy it. But is that correct?
That is correct. Genuinely, those first few minutes, I genuinely thought, how the bloody hell am I going to manage this? And I thought, is that just because I'm in the front row?
Yes.
And just dreamt of being at the back. The front row, it was a proper sort of foghorn blast. I'm a provincial middle-aged man. I don't need surround sound.
It's time for Provincial Dad Chat. Who's hit my bloody walking boots?
Darling, have you been relabeling my paraffin and white spirit bottles?
Get your skates on, kids, otherwise we'll miss the inflatable session.
She's taking her mother to see Blood Brothers, which means more Top Gear time for me.
Why would I need to go and see a podiatrist?
Of course I've kept the warranty information, darling.
Don't need surround sound, don't want it. I want to know where the sound is coming from, right? I don't want to feel like the sound from the telly is coming from behind my left ear. I want to look at the telly and know.
In real life, sound doesn't come from surrounds, does it? If someone's talking to you, the sound's coming out of their mouth. It's not coming from all around you.
Yes. Get very uneasy about that.
It's just, I suppose, just silly on me. But if I want an all-encompassing, immersive experience, I'll actually just... Maybe it's silly, but I'll just go to the National Gallery and I'll sit in front of one painting for up to 5 hours. And that's just something that I do. And for me, that's the true... I mean,
or you'll just ease a little wooden rowing boat out into Lake Windermere. Just put a nose in a smelly old book, won't you? Just put your nose in some Keats.
Put my nose deep in some Keats.
Let's make a resolution that we'll never mention the Avatar movie ever again.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And obviously, we do value, just want to say thanks to the guys at Chattertar, we do value the collaboration.
Yeah.
I don't know why you didn't call it Avachat.
or Banffachar. There were so many other ways they could have gone, couldn't they? Avabantar. Yeah. Yeah.
But I think we should make this a hard rule that if any of us mentions the Avatar universe from now on, we just have to stop the podcast there and then.
Yeah.
Okay. Even if we're like 5 minutes in, that's it.
All this talking about avatars made me think that I wouldn't mind, you know, just feeling my imagination being transported and stimulated, and it's probably that's just a silly thing, but I think I'll probably end up just hiking up, hiking my way down to the tube, tubing it to Hampstead Heath, and probably just whacking my headphones on and just listening to a great fugue. And in a way, for me, that is the exploration of the imagination, is actually just letting letting myself imagine those things. Right. That's probably just silly, because it's better to have those things just served up for you, isn't it, by someone else, but that's just the way I do it.
Time for your emails.
When you send an email, you must give thanks to the postmasters that came before.
Good morning, postmaster. Anything for me?
Just some old shit.
When you send an email, this represents progress. Like a robot shoeing a horse.
Give me your horse.
My beautiful horse.
We've got an email from Harley.
Oh, this is Harley, not Harvey.
Yeah, so last week I said that we had something out with Boom Machine that's sent in by someone called Harvey. Turned out to be sent in by Harley. So, sorry, Harley.
But you've already tackled... You've tackled the pre-bollocking online, haven't you?
I accepted the bollocking over Twitter, yes. But I feel like you have to do it over the audio medium to get the full penance.
Bollocking accepted.
Jacob emails, Dear Beams, as I imagine is the case with most listeners, I often use the Thatcher Chill Zone as a relaxing sleep aid.
Yeah.
We should probably, for listeners who haven't heard that, in an early series, I can't remember quite why, but we ended up making a Margaret Thatcher-themed sleep audio tape.
That's right.
That uses relaxing music and the speeches of Margaret Thatcher to send you off to sleep. I can't remember why.
Don't pull on that thread.
The Thatcher Chill Zone.
Where there is discord.
He says, when sharing... Oh, he's in the sleep episode, he says. When sharing the sleep episode of your podcast with my brother Jim, I told Spotify to start the program from the aforementioned Thatcher Chill Zone, which in doing so seems to inadvertently introduce a bug into Spotify. Now every time I start any song or podcast on Spotify, it plays the Thatcher Chill Zone instead.
And that's for life as well.
I have tried restarting the app and even running it on my laptop. However, the end result is always the same.
Jacob, you're going to have to go... Yeah, you're going to have to get off-grid and go back to the old C90s, it sounds like.
He writes, at first I found this humorous. However, I'm now beginning to get increasingly concerned that this may be the work... of Spurbs.
Spurbs, first time we've heard that name in a while, isn't it?
Yeah, we've not heard from Spurbs for a while.
Yeah, maybe he's gone sort of deep, deep dark web.
Yeah, and maybe he's gone out into the listenership more, you know, plaguing them more than us.
Well, he's become an idea, hasn't he? Rather than a... So that's what he always wanted.
Well, that's the trouble. As soon as you think that Spurbs might be behind something, then
he already is.
He writes, I feel like I could end up in a 2001 Space Odyssey type situation with Spurbs taking over all the electronic devices in my house and monitoring my every move. My initial plan was to destroy all my gadgets and burn my house to the ground.
Good idea.
However, I'm not sure this course of action goes far enough. Yeah. Please advise ASAP. Yours, a very concerned Jake.
Jake, get yourself to the Yukon, mate.
This is a Canada situation, isn't it?
Yeah. Yukon or the Northwestern Territories, you've got to get as far away as you possibly can. And you've got to learn some new skills. You're going to have to learn trapping.
Yeah.
You're going to have to learn ice fishing. It's the only answer.
This afternoon, you're going to have to use Amazon for the last time in your life. And what I suggest that you order from Amazon is a small wooden hut to be delivered to Canada. complete with... gutting material. You have to get very into gutting. You're going to have to use every part of a trout, isn't it? That's something you're going to have to learn to do. Is that you eat the flesh, you keep the bones to make arrowheads.
You take the eyes to make sunglasses. You just gently smoke the eyes of the trout and put them on sticks.
I was listening to something the other day that said that in some parts of the Northwestern Territories, they use the skin of the fish to create windows, translucent windows.
Yeah, you're going to be looking at the world through fish skin windows.
And they would use the fish anus as a peephole, because otherwise it would... Otherwise it would rip if you made your own hole in it.
Is that true?
That's what I was listening, yeah. It was true, according to a man on a podcast.
But it will lead to a decent book, I imagine.
Oh, eventually.
Called something like Life Through a Fish's Anus.
Yeah.
My Adventures in the Yukon, that kind of thing.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Well, best of luck, Jacob.
Good luck.
This is from Mike. He writes, hello. After listening to your recent podcast where you discussed the link between John Grisham and airports, our senses were heightened to this phenomenon. On the plane to our winter sun holiday, we spotted someone going into the toilet with a John Grisham novel. This spawned the secret code phrase for the necessary absences of going for a full Grisham.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
I thought you'd like to know.
I like
so
that.
So thank you, Mike.
I like that very much. Yeah.
Are they saying that going for full Grisham means going to the toilet, is it? Is that what they're saying? That's the phrase they...
I think full Grisham is probably the number two, right?
Yeah. Yeah. If you're just going for a Grisham blurb.
Just going for a Grisham blurb or something.
Yeah.
Which is the same. That's the only authorism, but all the blurbs are exactly the same.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
This is a book by John Grisham.
If you're a Grisham reader, this bit on the back is going to make no difference because you're already signed up to Grisham, so just get on with it. Here's a picture of a smoking gun or something.
Or a smoking affidavit.
But actually going for someone reading in an airport seems quite cavalier to me. To me, that's in an airport loo.
Well, it's not clear to me whether it's the airport or the plane.
Either way, it's brassy, isn't it? Because plane loos generally have a bit of a queue. So the idea of someone going in ahead of you with a book.
That's not really on, is it? And if it's in the airport, to me, that's the classic behaviour of someone that thinks they've got about... They've actually got... Traffic was fine in the end, so we've actually got about an hour and a half until the gate's even announced, and they've got arrogant...
They're dancing a dangerous dance, in my view. You know, have they checked how long the estimated walk time is to that gate? Do they know even which gate it's... Yeah, crazy.
Because you're going to be that chump who's running down the halls, who doesn't know, who doesn't have all that stuff recorded. Isn't it all the different gate distances? Mike, you've got all that stuff written down. You've got all that stuff in a folder, in a laminated file, haven't you?
Yeah, which I take with me everywhere I go, just in case I need to catch a flight somewhere at some point at short notice, which I never do.
You also got a laminated Grisham, which you can take into any public toilet and use with impunity.
you can read it in a vomit-flecked zorb. You can read it at the bottom of the ocean. You can read that anywhere.
When I turned 40 and they gave me my wipe-clean Grisham, I've never been happier. Yeah. I felt seen.
Oh, I always find when I'm in an airport, my gate will be like, it's gate 37. And I'll be like, okay, I've got half an hour, I should be all right. I'll buy some miniature creams. I'll buy some miniature cream bottles in the boots.
Selection of different skin creams? All the creams?
All the creams. Just anything, skin creams, anything creamy.
Creams, clotted creams.
In a mini bottle.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, pick up a paper, whatever, get a Pret a Manger.
Get a high-end watch.
maybe a high-end watch.
Put yourself in a raffle for an Aston Martin.
Maybe drop £650 on some luggage. The assumption being that I've come to this airport with all my clothes and stuff just in my arms. Maybe I'll do that. Yes, maybe I'll buy a life-changingly expensive object. You know, like maybe I'll buy the most expensive...
Who's buying a Rolex when they're waiting for a plane in Stansted Airport? It's not going to happen.
An object that's going to change my life. An important object, a legacy object, an object that's going to be in my family for generations. I'll just quickly get it because I've got enough time actually. I can get my shower gels. I've got enough time and pop the shower gels, get a coffee, and buy this life changing legacy watch, which will be a symbol throughout the generations of my family of time and love and meaning.
And you'll be able to tell the story of where you got it next to the tie rack. Gatwick.
So I'll be in that situation and I think I've left enough time for the gate and I've got to find there's gate 37. All I need to do is just look at the sign. Okay, so we've got, brilliant, gate, so I'm gate 37, Great, so gates 1 to 36 are that way, yep. Which means if I look at this sign on the right, I'll see that gates 38 to 107 are that way. And my gate just doesn't... It's between the signs. It's fallen between... It doesn't have a... I've got the one gate that just doesn't have its moment. It's fallen between two... Do you know what I mean? It's always, that's my gate!
Well, I have a similar experience, which is always, oh, I'll see where my gate is. Oh, it's number 29. Okay, well... 1 to 28, you just walk over there. And then 29, you have to get on a monorail. What? And then suddenly I thought I had time, but actually I'm going to take a 20-minute monorail trip somewhere else.
Just give the information. Turns out gate 29 is the only gate that you actually have to fly to. It's got its own airport. You have to have bought your... If you've not bought your gate 29 air ticket already, you have to have bought that in advance.
You have got your gate 29 visa, haven't you? Because you would have needed that.
Because it's very, very tricky at gate 29 at the moment. So you need to have applied for that 3 months ago.
Have an interview at the embassy.
You got your yellow fever jab, right? Because the yellow fever is rife at gate 29.
Absolutely, it's crawling with it at gate 29. And I tell you what, the toilets there are very, very weird. It's a different... I mean, I personally wouldn't go. But actually, the Home Office, I think, is advising that there's actually a war going on in gate 29. You're not technically supposed to. It's a coup.
Your travel insurance will be null and void if you step into gate 29, I'm afraid.
Well, yes. Thank you to everyone who sent us emails this series. This is the end of the series, pretty much. So... Do send emails in the meanwhile, though, because it'll give us something to talk about when we come back.
It's time to pay the ferryman. Patreon.com/3beansalad.
Now, if you feel you didn't get quite enough Avatar 2 chat, and you probably have, but if you feel otherwise, there is more, or there will be more, in our bonus episode. If you sign up on Patreon, we put out a monthly bonus episode made up of extra bits that we don't put out on these episodes. And to do that, go to patreon.com/3beansalad. There are other tiers. There's the tier that gets you no adverts. There's the Sean Bean tier, which gets you a shout out in the Sean Bean Lounge, where Mike was last night.
It certainly was. For the last time this series, no less.
A lot of tearful goodbyes to the regulars, I imagine.
It was emotional, but we had a good time nonetheless, because of course it was.
It was the inflatable speedboat race, wasn't it?
It was the inflatable speedboat race.
You flooded the entire place, I think.
We did, yeah, at considerable expense. So, the big clean-up job underway at the moment. But in the meantime, as for last night, here's my report. It was the inflatable speedboat race last night at the freshly flooded Sean Bean Lounge. Jason Fried Bunny Ray's freshwater flooding petition and Nia Kirwan's saltwater march had both attained poor numbers, and the nature of the floodwater itself looked likely to spark trouble until Rhea stepped in with leadership, diplomacy and 4 million tins of tuna in brine and suggested a perfect briny halfway house. Daniel Rigby kicked off proceedings with an inflatable torpedo boat tied into the shape of a three-legged crown-wearing balloon poodle. But a slow puncture in the left hind knee caused it to weave off course at the third furlong and capsize Tom Longfield's inflatable car ferry. Joe's blow-up Concorde Coracle would have broken a brine speed record were it not for the inflatable cables of Lena Sheffer's floating bridge, which sliced it and Joe to ribbons. Jeff Allen's supersonic gas bag gondola was neck and neck with Sarah King's Aqua Zeppelin-style arc, until she jettisoned the ungulates and accelerated through the finish line for a comfortable gold. The record should also show that Hopek's Lilo tanker was shredded in the gauntlet of hot barbs. James Davies' lung pedalo was declared unsafe to inflate outside of a hyperbaric chamber. Caitlin's Formula One plug-in automatic inflation hydrofoil catamaran galleon was just a drawing. And William Reid's experimental arse-insufflated superyacht dissolved. Thanks all.
Okay, that's the podcast. And to play us out, a version of our theme tune sent in by one of you, the listeners. And this is from Peter, who's from a bit south of Bremen.
Thank you, Peter.
Thanks, Peter.
He says, I thought you might enjoy the theme tune in a 1970s New York minimalist style, in the style of Steve Reich.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
I don't know what that means, really.
It's very much,
No, everyone can handle it.
It's great stuff. It's sort of, are you guys, you know, going to see a big action film or whatever, a thriller or whatever? For me, it's sort of my... it's my little silly version of that. It's just, yeah, I'll listen to a Steve Reich symphony, or maybe just think about Steve Reich. that's how I get off. But
when he says perhaps enjoy is the wrong word. Okay. So,
well, some people don't. For some reason, I'm stupid, I suppose. I enjoy minimalist music, and Philip Glass, Steve Reich. Most people find it really boring and stuff, but for some stupid reason, as silly old me, I just love it and really enjoy it, and actually,
I actually understand it.
But I suppose it's just a silly riff. Somehow, I just like being challenged and things like that. But yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll see you in the month of
indeed.
March.
Thank you, Peter, and thank you everyone for listening.
Until then,
cheerio. Yes.
Goodbye.